begin the current daven itself, the Ksubas daf Samachas, begin 11 lines down the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf from the top of this Amud, where the Gemara was discussing the mitzvah of tzedakah, and specifically how the Ramoin, the deceivers, are the ones that cause us not to give tzedakah, because we then lump them all together and say that those who are collecting are all phonies. Now the Gemara says, turn up on learn Abraisa. I'm a Samias Enoi. If someone makes himself to be like he's blind, or if a Hamatz ves bitnoi, or if he makes like his stomach is bloated due to lack of food, or if someone makes believe as if his foot, his thigh, is shrunk, as if he has a problem with his foot. So, this person actually does not leave the world until he actually comes to that type of situation. If this person is putting on the front, making believe he has all these problems to be able to collect inappropriately charity, actually he will end up getting that problem. So too, Hamakabel Tzedakah V'Tzarech L'Kach, if someone receives charity and he doesn't really need, ultimately he's not going to leave this world until he actually does need the charity that he's making believe that he really needs. Now, a related discussion the Gemara brings regarding this about who is a true pauper and who is not. So Tan Hasa, we're under within the Mishnah Masechtas Peah. Now, the beginning, the ratio of that Mishnah says that somebody that has 200 zuz, a minimum amount of money, cannot take the matnas anim of leket, which are the gleanings from the field, or shikra, those bundles that are left there, and pay, which are the corners of the field. Now, the Mishnah says, however, that ein mechayev noisi limker es besa, we don't require this poorer on the standards of he has less than 200 zuz, but he has assets. So the Mishnah says we don't require him to be meiches basic to sell his house, as klei tashmisha, and to sell all his utensils, to thus supplement and get him over the 200 zuz a level, and that he shouldn't be able to take. We don't require him. So if he only has 190 zuz, but he has assets, it's okay. He has less than 200 zuz. He could collect matnas anay. Now that thing, Rashi Beloy, is that really true that we don't make him sell to be able to get over that 200 zuz level and not be able to collect matnas anim? But the time when the Braisa says, "Hoy mishdamish b'klei zahav," if let's say he was using golden utensils, golden vessels, mishdamish b'klei kesem, now he should only use silver. B'klei kesem, if he was using silver, mishdamish b'klei nechayishes, he should use copper, because how can you go ahead and collect the gifts of the poor? You're not poor. You could sell off your assets, and then you're not by the minimum lower category. So how does that go together with the Mishnah Masechtas Peah? So Amar Zvedi says Lekash, it's not a contradiction. Ha, the price that sells that says you have to sell off and get something cheaper, and thus you're not really poor, is Toma B'mita V'Shocha. It's Toma a bed and a table that you have to sell. But ha, but the Mishnah Masechtas Peah that says you don't have to sell, was Toma B'Kaisis V'Ka'aris. It's Toma cups and plates. Now that the Gemara asks, Maishna Kaisis V'Ka'aris D'Loi. Why is it any different by cups and plates that you don't have to sell, and thus you're still considered poor, because the Amar Me'isili, because it says it's repulsive for me to have to eat on anything less than the plates and the cups that I'm used to, but Mitav Shulchan Amis, and the bed and the table should be the same thing. Amaloy Mekabel Elevoy, he'll say that anything less than that is not comfortable for me, it's not something I can get used to, so why over there would it be any different regarding what you have to sell and what you don't have to? Rather, Amar Rava, Bered the Rabbah, he says, the price that says you have to sell, really truthfully, one doesn't have to sell their items. Because as the Gemara said previously, it's measly, it's not something a person would have to sell off. He is considered poor. But the price that says you have to sell is talking about machresh or the kaspa. It's talking about a silver plow, which that's just extravagance. That's not something that person has a necessity whatsoever. And therefore, such a thing you have to sell, and therefore you're not poor. But anything else that's a regular item, a person does not have to sell, as the Mishnah says himself, to pay, and he really is considered poor. Or another approach, Rav Papa, he says, loy kasha, it's not a contradiction. Because Khan, over here in the Mishnah Masechtas Peah that says that you don't have to sell, is talking about originally. In other words, koidim sheyovel degivui, before he comes to a situation, which that's what the Bryce is going to be talking about, where the Bezin wants to collect from him. Rather, it's talking about originally a regular person that has less than 200 zuz, and he wants to come to take the matnas anim, the gifts of the poor. Now, if he would sell his utensils, so then he would get 200 zuz, On that is what the Mishnah says in Masechtas Peah, that you don't have to sell. But Kan, the Brice that says that you do have to sell, was told Malacha Shayovel de Givui. After that, the collections are coming. In other words, after that, he brought himself to a situation where Bezdin wants to collect from the case is told. For example, let's say he really had 200 zuz. And in spite of that, he still took Leket Shekropeah. Now, then they become aware that he was really, quote, a wealthy person, meaning over the 200 zuz mark. So Bezdin comes and wants to collect from him what he took, because it was inappropriate what he took the Matnas Aniyim. Now, if now he doesn't have what to pay up for the gifts that he took, so now is what the Braisa says, he has to sell off his more expensive utensils, and now he could use something that's cheaper. So if he had gold, now you use silver. If he had silver, you use copper. But that's only because they want to collect from him what he had taken inappropriately. But in a regular situation where someone's coming to take Matnas Aniyim and he has less than 200 zuz, then he doesn't have to sell off any of his items. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, continuing on the theme of the previous Mishnah, of the Nedunya, of the dowry that a woman brings into her marriage, which is then written into the Ksuba, what she brought in. So the Mishnah tells us, Yisema she'si asa ima oyachecha midaita, regarding an orphan that rabbinically her mother or her brothers are allowed to marry her off. Now, if they marry her off with her consent, which as Rashi points out is telling us a specific chiddush, that even if she's agreeable, her mechila, her forgiving on the lower dowry that they give her, is not considered a valid mechila because she's a ketana, she's a minor. And therefore, even if a kastavula b'meyoi b'chamishim zuz, if they write for her her dowry for 100 or 50 zuz, yecheilehi misha takdol, she could, when she becomes an adult, lahaitzi miyadun masharo lihinasana, to take out, to remove from them and collect what was coming to her, which is that there's halacha that when the father dies, which is the case that we told her that she's an orphan, she's allowed to get a tenth of his assets as a dowry. Now, they didn't give her that. They gave her much less because she was a young girl, and she agreed to it, but she didn't know any better. And that's the chiddush of the Mishnah, that when she becomes an adult, she could go out and collect the rest of the tenth of his assets that was coming to her. Butaimer, he says a different qualification. He says, Imhesi, if the father, when he was alive, married off as Habas Rishayna, the first daughter, then Yinosin Lishniya Kederk Shinosin Rishayna. So then what happens is that when, now that he's dead, when they're marrying off the second daughter, that's the brothers and the mother is marrying her off, they give her the same amount that was given to the first daughter that the father had given when he was alive. Now that is, as Rashi points out, whether that's a tenth of his assets, whether it's less, or whether it's more. That's the qualification that Rabbi Yehuda gives. But V'chacham Ma'amim, they argue. They say, Pa'amim sh'adim ani v'hesha. How can you say that it goes based on what the father did with the first girl? But sometimes a person is poor and it becomes wealthy. Or he was wealthy and becomes poor. And therefore you can't use what was the situational circumstances by the first daughter to what's happening now when the second daughter is getting married. They evaluate the assets and they give her, in other words, they give her a tenth of the nechasim, but you don't do exactly what was done by the first daughter. Now, related to the discussion of our Mishnah, which is regarding a Yisayimah that's getting married, how much does she get from her late father's estate as parnasa, as in the dunya, as a dowry that she brings into a new marriage? So Amar Shmuel says the following halacha. He says, Lefarnasa, which is a woman that's a Yisayimah, that's coming to get married, so they give her her nedunya, her dowry, which is Shaman Be'av, according to how much we assess how what we know about the father, was he stingy, was he very giving, we evaluate how what we know about him, and that's how we know how much to give her in her dowry. Now, on that, the Gemara asks Meisvei. The Gemara asks from the following Braisa. The Braisa says, Habonis nizaynis umisparnesois minichse avin. The girls get fed and get supported from the father's estate. Now, Ketzad, what's the case? So the Braisa says, Ein oimrim, we do not say, Ilu aviyokayim kach v'kach hayinoisinla. Had the father been alive, that's how much he would have given her. That's not what we say. We evaluate how much the estate has, and that's how much we give to the orphan girls. Now, that the Gemara asks San Shmuel, my love, parnasa sabal. What does the term parnasa mean? It means, as it generally connotes in the Tanaic literature, that it's talking about the nedunya, the dowry that is coming into the marriage to the husband. And what do we see? That the Bryce says explicitly, we do not evaluate the father, as Shmuel said, but rather we are evaluate the nechasim, the estate as it is. And that Amar Nachman Yitzchok, he says, no, it's not difficult on Shmuel, because b'parnosas atzma. It's not talking about the parnosa of her husband, meaning that she brings into the marriage. Rather, it's talking about her own parnosa, meaning mizaynus, her sustenance when she's still living with her brothers, the male orphans. Now that the Gemara asks, how can you say that? Hanizaynus u'misparnosas ketani. There's two terminologies in that brisa. One is nizaynus, which sounds like her mizaynus, and then there's parnosa. So my love. Achas parnasa sabal. What does the term parnasa mean? It sounds like it's referencing to the nedunya, the parnasa for her husband. V'achas parnasa satzman, nezoinis is the one for herself. So that again contradicts Shmuel. And that the Gemara says, no, idvi parnasa satzman blekasha. Both are talking about for herself, and it's not talking about her dowry. Ha b'chelo b'shtiyah. One's in reference to eating and drinking. And this one is talking about, notably the term of parnas is talking about for her clothing. That is, as the Braisa says, that we evaluate the estate, and that is if he's poor. So then you give, as it said in Daf Samach Dalam and Beis and Perak Afalpi, the same thing, the equivalent, the minimum is like when he supports his wife through a third party. If there's a large estate, then you give according to the cover, according to the dignity, according to how much is necessary. But it doesn't contradict Shmuel because it's not talking about parnasa of nedunya, it's talking about parnasa's atzma of her clothing. But the Gemara continues asking on Shmuel because it's not within our Mishnah. The Chacham Aymrim, they said, are arguing on Rabbi Huda. They said, pa'amim sha'adim ani behashra. Sometimes a person is poor and then becomes wealthy. Ay asher ba'ani, or he's wealthy, he becomes poor. And therefore you can't give the second daughter who's now an orphan the same thing that the father had given when he was alive to the first daughter. Rather, what do? We evaluate the estate and we give her. Now, the Gemara proves the question by first clarifying the terms used. My ani, my usher. What do the Chacham mean to say that he could have been wealthy then poor, or poor then wealthy? If you say that poor means poor in money, in his assets, and usher bin chasim, and wealthy means wealthy in his assets. But that inference would make it sound like that the first opinion mentioned, that of Rabbi Huda, that a fellow usher veheni, that even if he was wealthy and then became poor, that kidimi kara, like was given originally to the first daughter, yahavinla, that's what you give to the second daughter, because that's what Rabbi Huda's halacha was. But the question would be, but how can you say that? If it literally means to say that he was wealthy and became poor, if he doesn't have the money to give the second daughter like he had when he was wealthy by the first daughter, how could Rabbi Huda mandate that now they would give the second daughter what he had given when he was wealthy? So Elav, Rabbi Gemara proves, Ani Bedas. What does it mean in the Chachamim's terminology of becoming wealthy and poor? It means poor in his thought process, meaning that is, he didn't have in mind to give her a wealthy dowry. Rather, he became more stingy to give a nedunya of a pauper. An usher bedas. And wealthy means to say wealthy in his thought process. Now, if that's the idea, the Ketani, and we learned, what did the Chum then say? That shaman esan nechasim anayis nalah, that because a person could be at one point being magnanimous and then being stingy, so he says you can't go ahead and do what, like Rabbi Yehuda had said, that you go based on what was done the first time, because he could have changed his mind. So on that, the Chum says, so now by the second daughter who's an orphan, that we evaluate the estate and we give her, and that is Alma, what we see is that loyalty, that we do not go based on evaluating the person, because people change. And therefore, the Tayyuf to the Shmuel, I refute Shmuel, who says that you are Shaman Ba'av, that you do evaluate the father. Here we see clearly that we don't, because people change. So that the Gemara answers, Huda Amak Rabbi Huda. You're right, the Chum is not like Shmuel. But Shmuel is like Rabbi Huda, that's not like we learn not Mishnah. He's the first opinion mentioned. Rabbi Huda Omer, he says, Im Hasi Bas Rishayna, if he married off the first daughter, Yinasin Lishniya Kedech, Shinasin Rishayna, so you give to the second daughter the way he gave to the first daughter. Which means to say that we do evaluate the father. Now, if you don't know how much he gave to the first daughter, or if there wasn't such a situation of a first order, so then you evaluate how much you think you would have given. So that's exactly like Shmuel. So the Gemara asks, so v'neim halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. So why did Shmuel say this whole halacha lefanas shomim ba'av? Why didn't he just say that halacha is like Yehuda of our Mishnah? So that the Gemara says, I'm a halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Had he just said those words, that halacha is like Yehuda, havamina davke hisia. We would have thought to say it's exactly as the case conceptualization of our Mishnah, that only if the father had first married off one daughter, then died, the goli daite, that at some point we have at least a premise that he has revealed to us what his ideas are, marrying off a daughter. And then we use that as a baseline to know what to do for the second one. Avalohi si Allahi, but if he never married off a daughter, then we wouldn't use him as some type of an evaluation to know how much to use for the second one. K'mashamlon, that's what Shmuel is teaching. That time of Rabbi Yehuda, the reasoning of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is daslina basa umdin, is because we go based on what we evaluate what the father would have wanted. It doesn't make a difference if he had first married off a daughter and then died, or he had never married off a daughter. Now, Hayadik Tani Hisi, so why did he say it in the case of that he had first married off a daughter? Is Lahidiyacha Kirchen Drabbanan, is that the time that the Mishnah said it to show the strength of the opinion of those who argue on him of the Rabbanan, that they hold the Avagav Desi of a Goli Daita, that even he had once married off a daughter, and he already revealed how much he liked spending on the wedding, still, they held that, no, we do not go based on the valuation of a person, because people change. He could be Ani Badas and then become Asher Badas. He could be an Asher Badas and become an Ani Badas. And therefore they said that Yesham and Nechasim, but again, that opinion of the Chachamim, you're right, it's not like Shmuel, but Shmuel doesn't paskin like the Chachamim, paskins like a Yehuda. And Amalei Rav Rav Chizra, Rav said to Rav Chizda, Tashin and Mishmecha, they expounded in your name, Halacha Kebi Yehuda, that just like we said, Shmuel holds, that you also hold like that, the Halacha is like Rebbe Yehuda. So Amalei, so Rav Chizda responded, says, Yehi Rava, let it be the will of heaven, Kol Ki Hanu Milim El Yasa, Tidushu Mishmai, that such favorable things, like saying the Halacha is like Rebbe Yehuda, should be expounded in my name. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, Umiyama Rava Hachi? Did Rava really say this, which he said to Rav Chizda, that it sounds like that this is the halacha like Rabbi Yehuda? But V'tanya learned in the Braisa that Rabbi says, Bas hani zaynis min ha'achim. A daughter that's getting sustenance from the brothers, meaning that her father passed away and she gets fed from the estate, meaning the orphans, the brothers, neitelis isu nechasim. So when she wants to get married, she takes a tenth of the estate. And what that means is that we do not evaluate the father. She takes, like the Chacham had said, a tenth of the estate, which is in the Nechasim. V'amar Rav and Rav said, Halacha's like Rabbi. Halacha's like Rabbi, which seemingly is clear like the Chachamim, and not like Rabbi Yehuda. So how could Rav had said that they expounded Halacha like you is like Rabbi Yehuda, and that seemingly is what they're paskening, when Rav says Halacha's like Rabbi, who says that you go based on Ish Nechasim, based on what the Chacham said in our mission of Shomen Es Nechasim, and not on Shomen Es Av? So I think my answer is Loi Kasha. It's not a difficulty. Because, this that he had said to Rav Chizda, which seemingly he was agreeable to, that the halacha is like a Yehuda, is toma da'am dine, where we evaluated the father, then we go based on the father's evaluation. This that Rebbe said, and Rabbi said the halacha is like Rebbe, that we go based on the tenth of the estate, is deloyim dine, is where they weren't able to evaluate the father because he didn't live here where the Bezdin was. And they don't know what type of a person he was, if it was a giving person or a stingy person. And that's why it doesn't contradict. The halacha is like a Yehuda when you know the father. When you don't know the father, that's like when Rebbe said that you give a tenth of Shaman Es Nechasim. As the Gemara says, Hachinam Mistabra, it actually makes sense to say that this that Rebbe said, that you give a tenth is only when you don't know the father. But even Rebbe would agree that if we knew and we could evaluate the father, that we would be shaman ba'av, like Rabbi Yehuda says. Because the Amr Vad Ba'ava, he says that Maisi was the story. But Nasna Rebbe Echad Mishneim Asar B'Nechasim. And Rebbe gave to the woman for her dowry from the brother, from the father's late father's estate, a twelfth of the estate. Well, Kashna Dadi, that's a contradiction. We just brought the Rebbe says, you give a tenth, and it's always a tenth. How could you have once given a twelfth? Elash Maminah, rather, it's exactly like how we just answered, that ho dam dine. The story where he gave a twelfth is because we knew the father. He was stingy. Therefore, we gave less than a tenth. Ha deloyam dine, where he says you always give a tenth is when we don't know the father. Shema mina, that proves the point that we said to resolve the contradiction in Rava. If he holds halachas like Rabbi Huda, or he holds halachas like Rabbi, again, he holds halachas like Rabbi Huda. When you know the father, when you don't, then it's like Rabbi who says, you give a tenth, because even Rabbi himself agrees, when you know, then you go based on the father. Now the Gemara turns to the previously discussed halach from Rabbi, and quotes the Braisa in its entirety, and expands upon this topic. So goof, we learned. Amar Rabbi, Rabbi said, Bas hanizaynis min ha'achim, said that a daughter that's getting sustenance from the brothers, meaning an orphan that the father had died, and therefore she's getting from the estate, which are her brothers. So they tell us, isun l'chasim, so she takes a tenth of the estate as what's called parnasa or nedunya, which is the dowry, which is what she takes from her father's estate into her new marriage to her husband. So Amar Leila Rabbi, they said to Rabbi, litvarecha, according to your opinion, mish yeshli esra banu seben. Somebody had 10 daughters and one son. What's going to come out is that the son's not going to inherit anything, and the daughters are going to take everything, because if each one takes a tenth and there's 10 daughters, so that is taking 100% of the entire estate. So Amalem said to them, no, this is what I said. Rishaina, the first one, and the Gemara's original assumption when it means the first one means to say the first one that's coming to get married, and they tell us, Isin al-Khasim, she takes a tenth of the estate. Now, Shnia b'masha shaira, the second one takes a tenth of what was left over. So let's say there was 100, and then the first one took 10, now there's 90 left. A tenth of 90 is not 10 anymore. It becomes 9. V'shlish is b'masha shaira, the third one takes a tenth of what was left over from the previous one, because now it went to 81. And then they each one take, v'chayzus v'chalkis b'shav, and then they go back and they split it all together evenly, so it's not going to be 100%, because there's 10% of 100 is not the same as 10% of 90, and then 10% of 81, it's not going to be the entire thing. So the son will get a nice size of the Yerusha, and the daughters that they each get 10% is 10% of what's left over. But it's not that each one even gets the 10%, it's that then all the daughters go pull together their 10% and then split it equally amongst all the daughters. Now, continue on to Amud Beis, where the Gemara asks on this, Kalchad v'chad d'nav sheshakla, each and every girl should take her own. In other words, the sages instituted on the dunya for her marriage a tenth of the father's estate. So the first one that gets married, she seemingly should get the tenth of what's in front of her, which is at that point 100. And then the second one should get a tenth of what's in front of her, which is then 90. So the question is, why does Rebbe say that then you should go back and split it up equally if each one should get the tenth of what they get? Why should they then have to go ahead and split it equally with the younger sisters? So I think Mer says, Nahochikam, and this is what Rebbe was saying. In bo kulam linasi ka'achas, if all 10 girls are coming to get married at the same time period, then chalkis b'shava, then they split it equally. And that's because there is no one that comes has first rights, and therefore the halacha is that since there is what we have to leave over for the son, so the way we do it is each one is going to get an equal share because there's no one coming first. But the way to divide it is they first have one take a tenth, the second one takes a tenth of what the other one left over, and so on. Then the remnants of that is going to be left over for the son. So as Rashi explains, if let's say there was 100 mana, so one takes 10 mana, then the second one takes 9, the third one takes 8, and these are all a tenth of what's left over. And this is, again, to only the reason why we're doing this, if what's the point of taking 10, 9, 8, each one taking what's left over, it's only so that we can clarify what is the Yerusha of the son, because we said they don't take all of it. And then whatever they took to then verify what's a tenth of a tenth of a tenth of a tenth of each one having the remnants of what's going on, then they go ahead and split it together. And however, of course, if there would be each one doing it at separate times, so each one will get the tenth of what they rightfully get. So the Gemara says, "Misayel Rav Masna." This supports Rav Masna's halacha. Then Rav Masna said, "Bo lehinase kolim ka'achas." If all the girls are coming to get married at the same time, noitlis isra echad, so they take 1/10. Which the Gemara asks, "Isra echad salkadaita?" Would you entertain that they really get 1/10? Elo noitlis isra ka'achad. Obviously, what he meant to say was that they take a tenth at the same time, but what does that mean? They each take a tenth at the same time. That would wipe out everything. Does someone want to get anything? That means to say you do it in this procedure that we described, where you take a tenth of 100, then a tenth of 90, then a tenth of what's left over, 81, and so on, and each one takes the 10th, and then they go ahead and split it equally amongst each other, and then the son will get the remnants of what's left over. Continuing on this theme, the Gemara brings Tarba and Lina Braisa. Habonais, the daughters, which is from the father's estate, where they're orphaned, Bein Bogru Acheloi Nesu, whether if they became a Boigres, which is that she matured as an adult over the age of 12 and a half, and even if she's not married yet, or Bein Nisu Acheloi Bogru, or even if she's not 12 and a half yet, she's not a fully an adult in that sense, but she got married already. So, first of all, Ivde Mezoinisan. So they lose their sustenance from the father's estate, meaning from her brothers, because that's actually what's written in the Ksuba, that the husband promises the wife that your daughters are going to be fed from my estate after I pass away, oy ad to devagrin, as it says, either until they become a begeres, oy ad to telachin l'govrin, or until they're taken by men. So if either one of those happen, they don't get mezainis anymore. Now, moreover, v'loy ivdu parnasasin, however, they do not lose their parnasa, which is this tenth of the nechasim of the estate, which is what's called parnasa, what they take for the husband when they're getting married, the dowry. That's divrei Rebbe, that's the opinion of Rebbe. Pshim d'lasayim, he says, no, af ivdu parnasasin. They also, besides losing mezainis according to everybody, he argues on Rebbe, and he says they even lose the tenth of the nechasim, which is what they take going into their marriage. Now, the reason for that is because Reb Shimon ben Elazar held that the whole institution of Nedunya was only where she gets married as a Ketana or as a Naira. However, if she became a Begeris already, so then she's already removed from that house. She's not part of the father's estate anymore. Now, so too, when she gets married as a Naira, since she's already a Gedolah over the age of 12, and she is accepting, she's willing, whatever it is that was given to her in her marriage, so she loses her panasa, she loses the tenth. Meaning, if she agreed to whatever was that they gave her, let's say they gave her a third of the, let's say they gave her a 20th of the estate, and she was willing, since she could be mechel because she's an adult, so she loses the rights to the tenth. However, and Rashi explains in the case of if she gets married as a ketana, there Reb Shimon ben Elazar would not argue, and he would agree that she's still part of the house because she's not a begeris yet. Moreover, even if she, as we learned in the previous Mishnah, if they give her 50 mon or 100, whatever it is that they give her, but not the appropriate amount that she's supposed to get, then since she's a ketana, she can't be Michael. Reb Shimon ben Elazar would agree that she would not have lost her parnasa, she could still go ahead and claim her when she's a gedayla. However, what Reb Shimon ben Elazar does argue on is if she's a begeres, or if she gets married as a naira, where she could be Michael and she could be Nisratza, because she's already an adult, so then she loses her rights to her panasa. Now, on that, the question is brought, so what should they do that, as Reb Shimon Elazar said, they lose their panasa, so if she's turning 12 and a half, suddenly she's going to be losing 10% of the estate, so what should they do? So seichel and bailam, so they should, so to speak, rent husbands, in other words, they should get married, and they should pay men to marry them before they become a begeris. And then the husbands will be able to get their panasa that they need to get. They'll make sure they'll get their wives' panasa because since they got married as a ketana, there everyone agrees that even if Shimon Elazar, she has the rights to her panasa, and that's what Shimon Elazar says you should do. Because or else, once she becomes a begeris or she gets married as an Irish, she's going to lose the rights to this 10% of the estate. Now, Amar of Nachman, so Nachman said regarding this brisa that Amar lihuna, Huna said to me, Rabbi, that although she loses her mezainis, but she, as it says that in the ksuba, either begeris or when you get married, but she does not lose her panasa. And that's even if she was nisbagra. Now, Esvei Rav of Nachman. Rava asked to Rav Nachman, who said this halacha from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said, Yisayma she'si'asa ima oyecheha midaita, which is halacha we just referenced before. An orphan that her mother or her brothers married her off willingly. They wrote for her either 100 or 50 zuz. So so when she becomes an adult, so she could remove from them what was coming to her. In other words, the tenth of their estate. Although they gave her much less, but she was a young girl. She didn't know any better. She was excited. She was getting married. When she gets older, she can demand the tenth of their estate. Now on that, Rava asked, Now, it sounds like from our Mishnah, the time of the Ketana, the reason is because she was a minor. And a minor, according to everybody, even according to Bishim Lazar, then she doesn't lose her Parnasa. But it sounds like Hagadayla, but if she was already an adult, meaning she was a Naira, then Vitra, then she was forgiving on the rest, whatever she was accepting, the 100 or the 50 Zuz, and she gets married, she's an adult, her Mechila is a forgiving, and therefore she loses the rest. Now, what we see from our Mishnah is that obviously a Stam Mishnah, which we Paskin like, is saying like Bishim and the Lazar. Because according to Rabbi, he says no. He says even if you were a Begeris already, or even if you were a Naira and you got married, you don't lose it. But our Mishnah seems clearly that saying only because she was a Ketana, which is like a Shimon Lazar. So how could you pask in Lahalach like Rabbi when the Stam Mishnah says like a Shimon Lazar? So the Gemara answers, Rav Nachman answers, says, Loi Kasha. It's not a contradiction from our Mishnah. Because this halacha that Rabbi said that she does not lose it, which Rav Huna said halachas like him, meaning even when she becomes a begeres, or if she gets married as a naira, was toma demachai, where she protested when she's getting married as a naira. She was saying, "Look, I know you're getting me married, and you're giving me much less than I'm supposed to be getting, but I'm telling you, I'm not giving up the rights to the tenth of the state that I'm supposed to be getting." And that's where Rabbi says, and that's where we're passing like him, that she still has the rights to it. Oh, but our Mishnah said that if she's an adult, meaning she's already a Naira, that she is forgiving and she loses the rest, it's Tumat Dolei Mechai, where she doesn't protest. Where she doesn't protest, their Rebbe would agree. So it's not a contradiction. The Halacha is like Rebbe, not like Shimon and Lazar. Our Mishnah is Tumat, where she doesn't protest. Where she doesn't protest, then of course she's forgiving on it and she loses it. So the Gemara says actually, Hochana Mistabi, that answer, that resolution actually seems logical. Because Imkain kashed Rebbe the Rebbe, because if we didn't give this answer, actually would be internal contradiction in Rebbe's opinion himself. Because the time like Lunna Braisa. Rebbe says, Bas Hanizainis Minaach, and the daughter that's getting fed from the brothers, meaning an orphan where the brothers inherited their father. They tell us Isnachasim, as we mentioned this halacha before, she takes a tenth of the estate for a dowry into her new marriage. Now the inference is Nizainis. That is, if she's coming to get married, that's the case that we're talking about. She's getting married. She's getting a tenth of the estate, which is for marriage purposes. It seemingly is only talking about a case when she's bas hanizaynis min ha'achim, when she's still getting fed. Now, getting fed is only if you're not a begeris yet. If you're a ketana or a naira, because when you're begeris, then you lose all rights, as we quoted previously from the nusach of the ksuba, where if she's begeris, she doesn't get fed anymore. So it sounds like only if nizaynis in, then the halacha would be that she gets a tenth of the estate. She ain't in a zaynis loy, but if she's not getting fed, meaning, in other words, if she's a begeres, then she wouldn't get an isin chasam, she wouldn't get a tenth of the estate of an adunya. Now, the problem with that is that Rebbe, as we just quoted him before on the top of this summit, said clearly in his argument, Reb Shimon Elazar, that a woman, even if she is a begeres, she still gets isin chasam, she does not lose that. That's where exactly he argued Reb Shimon Elazar. So that's a contradiction. Rather, we have to say exactly like we answered why it doesn't contradict on the halacha like Rebbe from our Mishnah. Because ha demechoi, the previous Bryce was talking about that she protested. When she protests, then she gets the tenth of the estate. Ha, the Bryce over here that we said that she loses it, that we're quoting right now, that says that if she's ainin a zenis, if she's a begeris, then loy that she doesn't get the tenth of the estate. We're talking about loy mechay, where she didn't protest. If she didn't protest, then it's like what we said, the vitra, then she is forgiving it, and then she does lose it. Sheshma minah, that obviously we can prove that the answer we gave, why it's not difficult to say halach is like our Mishnah, which is Stam Mishnah, and halach is like Rebbe, is because we see in Rebbe himself, we would have to answer that there's a difference if she protests or if she doesn't protest. If she protests, even if she's a Naira and getting married, or if she's in this Bagra, she doesn't lose the rights to the tenth of the estate for her dowry. And if she doesn't protest, then halach is like our Mishnah, that once she becomes a Begeris or a Naira that's getting married, then she does lose the rights to the tenth of the estate. Amalei Ravina l'Rava. Ravina said to Rava, Amalan Rav Adbar Ava Mishmecha. Rav Adbar Ava said to us in your name that Bagra ain't a tricha limchis. That when a girl becomes 12 and a half, she does not have to protest. In other words, even if she doesn't protest, she does not lose the tenth of the estate for her dowry. Nisis ain't a tricha limchis. So too, if she gets married as a naira, which these are the two cases we were discussing with Machlokes Rebbe and Shimon Elazar, that Rabbi Shimon Elazar says that she does lose it in these two cases, and Rebbe says that she doesn't, where we explain that even in Rebbe, it's only if she protests. But now Rav Abraham is telling Rava that if it's said to us in your name, then no. Actually, both these cases, when she becomes a begeris or if she gets married as a naira, she does not have to protest. But if it's double, where she's a begeris and she gets married, then she has to be meicha. And then if she doesn't get meicha, and then later she wants to say that, oh, where's the tenth of my estate? Then it's already lost. She can't get anymore. Now, so that's the Gemara's question. Could it really be that Rava said this? But for Esve Rava Rav Nachman, we just had the previous discussion the Gemara just quoted, where Rava asked Rav Nachman, Yisoyma, the halacha of our Mishnah, where there was the contradiction regarding if, when she becomes a begeris, if she loses the rights to Isin Nechasim, that sounds like from our Mishnah, which the halacha would be like that, but you, Rav Nachman, are quoting from Rav Huna halacha, like Rebbe, who says that she does not lose it when she becomes a Gedayla. And Bishani Le, and what was Rav Nachman's answer to Rava, where seemingly Rava accepted that answer because he didn't respond back to that, was that Hadimachi, this that Rebbe says that the halacha is, even if she's a begeris, that she's not going to lose the rights to the tenth of the estate, is talking about where she protests. Ha, this that we learned that when she's a gedayla, like in our Mishnah, that she is going to be forgiving on the rest and she loses it, is talking about Deloy Machi, where she doesn't protest. Now, what we see from that is that if she gets married as a naira and she doesn't protest, even if she's not a begeris, she has forgiven her rights to the tenth of the estate. Now, you're saying that if she gets married, she doesn't have to be meicha, even when she's a naira. How can that be that that's what Rava said when Rava himself understood from the resolution of the steer between our Mishnah and saying the halachas like Rebbe, that it's actually you do lose it if you're not meicha, if you get married as a naira or if you become a ger. So how could he have said these two halachas, which are contradictory to what Rav Nachman had explained to Rava, which Rava had accepted? So I think when it says, loy kasha, that's not either a difficulty. Because this that Rava said, that which from the previous Gemara's discussion, that if she gets married as a naira, that she doesn't, from this Gemara's discussion, which was said in his name, that Rav Abraham told him that it was said that if she gets married as a naira, she doesn't have to protest. That was talking about the komisazna minayu, where after she's getting married, she's still getting supported by the brothers. They're still feeding her. They're still sending food now to her new home with her husband. Now, since she's still getting fed from the brothers, from her father's estate, that's why she's quiet. And she's not going to want to make a big deal about, oh, where's the tenth of my estate? Because look, they're giving her food. But that's not a proof that she was forgiving on the parnasa. She doesn't feel it's appropriate to talk about it when they're still feeding her. That's why, yes, Rava says that the halacha would be that even if she gets married as a naira, she does not lose it, even if she wasn't meicha, even if she didn't protest. But this that we learned in the previous Gemara's discussion with Rav Nachman and Rava, which was posing the contradiction of the Mishnah onto saying the halachas like Rebbe, where we learned that if she becomes an adult, which was the dik that Rava had from our Mishnah, that she already forgave it if she wasn't meicha. She's not getting fed from them. They're not feeding her. So why don't you say anything about the tenth of the estate that you should rightfully get? If you didn't say it, obviously that's a sign that you were meichel, you were mevater, and that's why you would lose it, and therefore it's not a contradiction in the opinion of Rava that, yes, depending on the situation where we agree in Rebbe and the contradiction of Rebbe and the Mishnah, where the halacha is going to be like Rebbe, where she doesn't lose it even if she becomes a naira and gets married or if she becomes a begeris. But that's talking about, as we said, if she protests, you didn't forgive it, you could still claim it afterward, you become an adult after you get married as a naira. But the Mishnah was talking about, and the other halacha of Rebbe was talking about, where she didn't protest, then you do lose it. Now, although Rava then later was quoted as saying that you don't lose it even if you are getting married as a naira, and you don't lose it even if you become begeris. Only if you're begeris that gets married, is because that's talking about where she's still being fed from them. She's not going to go ahead and make a fuss about it, but that's not because she forgave it, it's just because it's not appropriate to complain when you're still getting fed from them, and that's why even then, one would still get the ability of the parnasa. Continuing on this discussion, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rebbe, parnasa, again, the nedunya, the dowry that a woman brings from her father's estate or from herself into the new husband's marriage, ain't a ketanai ksuba, does not have the same halacha as the condition of the ksuba, which is referring to the mezainis of the daughter. Whereas we learned in the Mishnah that it's one of the conditions in the ksuba which says, benan nukvin, the husband writes to the wife, that your female children will get fed from my estate after I pass away. So on that, Rav Huna is saying, in the name of Rebbe, that the nedunya is not the same halacha. So although a widow girl has two halachas, one is that she gets fed from the estate, and one is that she gets, let's say, a tenth of the estate to take into the new marriage, they're not the same. So the Gemara says, Ma'en t'nai k'nubas k'suba. What does this mean when he says that it's not the same as the condition of the k'suba, which again, which is referencing the mezainis that she gets from her father's estate? So the Gemara says, Inem, if you're going to say, means the ilu parnasa tarfa mimishabdi, because whereas her dowry, she could collect from mishubadim, in other words, where it's talking about, as Rashi explains that, where the brothers went and had properties that were sold off to other people, where that was mishubad already, it was indebted, she had a lien on them from the moment her father died. And that's why it can't be from something that her father had sold off, because actually the chiyuv of her panasa only begins when the father dies. So anything that was sold when the father was alive, she didn't have a lien on it. But anything that her brother sold was, and they don't have anything where she can collect from, she goes to the people that purchased from them, because there was a lien on any property they had the moment the father died that they had inherited. So if you're going to say that the difference is that whereas the dowry she could collect from the chasim mishabadim, yet v'tnai k'suba lo tarfa mishabdi, however, the condition of the k'suba, meaning the mezainis that she needs to get fed, food that they're giving her, she could not collect from things that they sold off to other people. Now, that is, as we learned in the Mishnah Masechtas Gittin, from Chesma Beis, where what's called imitzin, we don't take out from purchasers who purchase from somebody for achilas peiris, and for shvach kakoyis, and for the sustenance of the widow and the daughters, which is the case we're talking about, from the chasim mishabadim. And that's the reason is because it's called tikkun olam, where, because it's not a set amount, so no one's going to ever want to purchase from anyone anything, because maybe when that person dies, his daughters are going to say, oh, we want to get fed, but we don't know how much they need to get fed. So no one's going to want to buy anyone. So because of that, things that don't have a set amount, where a person could be careful and say, okay, am I willing to engage in this risky venture? You don't know how much it is. So because taking an item, you can't collect those from the chasim mishabadim. But her panasa, her dowry, you could collect. And that's because the Rabbanon made the daughter in the context of her dowry as a bal chayiv, because it's a set amount of a tenth of the estate from when the father dies, and therefore they know to be wary. They know, okay, we're willing to engage in this because we know up to a tenth of the father's estate might come ahead and be collected from the purchases. But again, as we said, mezainis doesn't have a set amount, therefore that's because it's tikkun olam. So if that's what Rav Huna means to say by creating this disparity between her dowry and her mezainis, well, that might come ashman. What's he teaching us? These are things that happen every single day, that mitzin leparnasa, where people go ahead and the girl goes and collects from the purchases of things that the brothers had sold off, which had her lien on it the moment her father died. They mitzin lemezainis, and we do not collect from purchases for sustenance. So we know this. These are things that people do. What would we need Rav Huna to be teaching us this? So Ve'ela, what would you say? A different difference. The ilu parnasa gavi namim mitalti, because whereas her dowry she could collect not only from the chasim mishabadim, but even from mitaltim, from movable items from the father's estate. Whereas v'tanai kisuba, whereas the condition of the kisuba, meaning her mezainis, if there's no money that the family has, but there's this land, so mimikarkoi gavi, so they could sell the land and they have to feed the daughter from that land, she could collect from that. But she does not collect. Let's say they only have movable items and there's no money, and they say, look, we can't feed you, sorry. So if there's only metatlin, she cannot collect from that to be fed. So that's the difference between parnasa, where she could collect from even movable items, whereas her mezainis she cannot collect from. But that the Gemara asks, but l'Rebbe, since this is Rav Huna quoting the name of Rebbe, EDVED, actually he holds that both Parnasa and Mezainis, Mikveh Gavya, actually could be collected from a Talmud, from movable items, the Talmud, like the Braisa. Echad Nechasim Shesh L'Nechareis, whether it's talking about properties that have responsibility, which is always a reference to Karka, because it's something that you could always have responsibility with, because it's reliable. It's something that you know is always there. Land is not running anywhere. You can always go and collect from them. Whereas, or even properties that don't have responsibility, meaning which are referenced to metatlin, to movable items, on that, the halach is might see in lamaz and the isha balabanis that we do collect for it, for the sustenance of the widow and the daughters, and all the more so her dowry. We don't have to talk about the dowry, but even mezainis, where we would have thought to say that since it's a condition of the ksuba, it should have the halacha like the ksuba itself, and actually the ksuba of the widow cannot be collected from a tatlin. That's the chiddush. Divi Rebbe, the Rebbe holds that not only could you collect the parnasa from a tatlin, but even mezainis. So therefore, that cannot be a case of what Rav Hun was saying in the name of Rebbe as a disparity between them. So Elamai, rather, the Gemara says, what does it mean when it says parnasa in a kenai ksuba? What does it mean that the dowry is not like the mezainis? Look at the Tanya for the following halacha, which mentioned the brisa. Ha'omer, if a man says as he's passing away, al yizaynu b'naisa b'nachasav, that his daughter should not be fed from his estate. So halacha is ain't shemalit. We don't listen to him, and the reason is because there's already a shibud, there's already a liability in the conditions written in the ksuba that he has to feed his daughters after he dies. So we don't list him and we feed the daughters. However, if he says al yisparnasu b'naisa b'nachasav, that his daughters should not get the tenth of his estate for their dowry when they get married, then shemalit. Then they listen to him and they don't give it to her. The reason is shapanasa eina, because the dowry is not an obligation on him, kitnai ksuba, like the conditions written in the ksuba. Rather, it's a responsibility, it's a liability on the orphans. But that's only where the father did not command them not to support. So that was the rabbinic institution that parnosa has to come from the father's estate. But it's not as strong as a tnai ksuba. And therefore, if the father doesn't say anything, then yes, they have to give parnasa. But if the father says, I don't want you to give a tenth of the estate for this daughter's dowry, then we list him and we don't give him. That's the difference, what Rav Huna was saying in the name of Rebbe, that parnasa is not like a nekesuba, that parnasa, we listen to him when he says that he's passing away, not to give this after he passed away to his daughter. Whereas tenai ksuba, that of mezainis, we don't list him because that is a tenai ksuba, that is a chayv already upon him, that is meshubad, and therefore he cannot retract it as he's passing away.